Militarily Speaking, episode 52, Give an Hour.
This episode, we talk with two guests, Dr. Trina Clayu, CEO, and Rebecca Edmondson, GAH intern.
And GAH is what?
Give an Hour.
Right.
It's like, what, you're asking me a trick question here?
I was trying.
I was just which one of us you were quizzing.
I know. He looked at me like, yeah, I'm going to play Stump the Chump first thing here.
So welcome to Stump the Chump. This is Militarily Speaking, brought to you by Armed Forces Bank. This is Tom McLean. I shouldn't use my real name, should I? All right. And Jody Vickery, I'm the Regional Military Executive for Armed Forces Bank, and Jody's the Executive Vice President, Director of Military Consumer Lending.
I'm worried about this episode already.
No segue?
No segue.
Do we have a segue? No.
No, I'm worried about you already today. Again, welcome to our show. We're really excited to have you listening and learning about our guests, Trina and Rebecca, with the organization Give an Hour, also known as GAH, for those playing along at home. I do want to take a few minutes and tell our audience a little bit about the two of you. This is all information that should be super well known to both of you, but so bear with me for a moment. Dr. Trina Clayu brings a wealth of executive experience in workforce development and mental health to her role as CEO of Give an Hour. With a proven history of visionary leadership and innovation, she has made significant contributions in enhancing access and the delivery of vital services within her field. Her career spans various impactful roles, including tenure as Chief Operations Officer for Social Impact Organizations, Director and Assistant Dean for Community College Systems, and multi-state coordination of a Department of Defense base realignment event and a national corporate network for military spouse employment. Having herself been a military and veteran spouse for many years, she possesses an innate understanding of the distinctive challenges and opportunities inherent in this community, making her a dedicated advocate for their personal and professional growth. Dr. Clayu holds a PhD in leadership studies from Gonzaga University.
Gonzaga or Gonzaga?
I'm going to say Gonzaga. How would you say it, Dr.?
I said Gonzaga, but go Zags.
Yeah. Okay, rewind. Edit.
One to one. Okay.
From Gonzaga University, a Master of Public Administration from Portland State University, and multiple certifications that underscore her commitment to excellence in her field. She's received recognition from esteemed organizations such as the National Association of Development Boards for her innovative approaches and the Sailing Award for Leadership Excellence. Moreover, Dr. Clayu's fervent dedication to knowledge sharing and catalyzing positive change has led her to present at numerous state and national conferences. Her presentations have covered topics that include optimizing employer and employee performance through person-centric design to cultivating trauma-informed workplaces and implementing contextual mental health practices that foster social connections and high-performance outcomes. In her present role at Give an Hour, Dr. Clayu continues to harness her executive acumen, profound expertise, an unyielding commitment to enhancing lives grounded in the belief that each one of us can contribute to the betterment of mental health for life. In her downtime, I can't imagine you have much of that based on everything that I just read.
That was very long.
Yeah, so this is actually very impressive to me.
This is where she and I have something in common.
I am doubtful that is true.
Oh, yeah.
No. She enjoys athletic activities and completed a full Ironman, two half Ironmans.
Just two of them?
And hundreds of running events. She remains active, understatement of the year, with her husband and retired veteran of 26 years and two children. So a full Ironman. I used to have aspirations to do even a half Ironman. And
you should.
Yeah, no.
Do it.
No. Yep. Yeah, no.
Is there another decimal point with that?
Yeah, I've done a triathlon, like a sprint triathlon.
Yeah. You're right there.
Yeah. I don't think
Trina,
so.
My wife did two marathons.
Yes.
And she did it like, it was like an hour and a half she did it. Yeah. Is that pretty good?
Yeah.
She
yeah.
did not run a marathon no. in an hour and a half.
It was 4 hours and 23 minutes. I just rounded 4 hours and 22 minutes.
Oh, 4 hours. Gotcha.
I rounded down.
Yeah. An hour and a half. Yeah. She ran like a 30-second mile.
It was a sprint. It wasn't a marathon. Yeah.
She was down for everyone.
Yeah, she was on a scooter.
But back to Trina. So when you say base realignment event, is that BRAC?
Yeah.
Is that truly a BRAC? You were part of a BRAC. We always talk about BRACs in our world, but they haven't happened in a while, right?
It was a really large one.
Was that? Where
the realignment was from Florida to Clovis, New Mexico.
Wow.
which is,
you know that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've ever, my ex was stationed at Clovis. And so it was, talk about a mental health event moving from the beautiful beaches of Florida
to the middle of New Mexico. Yeah, no doubt. I want to take a chance now to introduce Rebecca Edmondson. As an enlisted member in the United States Army, Rebecca Edmondson spent nearly, thank you so much for your service. Yeah. I should stop and definitely pause to say that. Spent nearly 3 out of 10 years of service deployed to Afghanistan in support of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Freedom Sentinel. In 2011, she was selected for the Joint Special Operations Command's Cultural Support Team, or CST, a program that paved the way for the integration of women serving in combat. Between 2012 to 2016, she worked alongside the 75th Ranger Regiment, conducting direct action night raids and training Afghan women to serve in a special operations partner military unit known as the Female Tactical Platoon, or FTP. In 2021, she worked with her former CST colleagues to safely evacuate 43 women of the FTP to the United States and spent the next 2 years working to help them acclimate. She's now pursuing a master's degree in social work and serving as a peer support facilitator and intern for Given Hour. Rebecca aspires to use her lived experience as a veteran to help impact military culture by reducing stigma and promoting mental health resiliency.
You know, when we put these bios on the piece of paper, you kind of like put words on a piece of paper. And then when you read it out loud, especially with Rebecca, it's pretty amazing stuff.
It's amazing, yes.
Yeah. It comes to life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does. Yes. Hmm. Impressive human. Thank you for being here, both of you.
This concludes today's podcast. So that was enough, man. I'm worn out.
Short reading by Jody Vickery. No, welcome both of you, Trina and Rebecca. It is important for us. I know it's probably awkward for you to hear all the stuff about yourself, but we love to share with our audience about our guest. And you're both achieved women in your own right. So thank you for letting us share with our audience about you both. It's an honor to have you here, first and foremost. But we'd love to have you just at the top of our podcast, tell our audiences a little bit about Given Hour, just sort of set the table, if you will. And then I'm sure we'll dive off in 100 different directions with questions that Tom and I both have for you.
Yeah. I can take this one and actually connect it to how Rebecca and I met. But Given Hour, we're a national mental health organization. We have a goal of helping develop resilient individuals through mental health in communities and addressing the access and delivery gaps in mental health. As many people know, we have one mental health therapist for every 350 people, so we don't have nearly enough therapists, and that we have a particular population that is going to require, has already required care, but is going to require so much more investment in mental health and understanding. So we're really trying to mobilize the country around mental health and mental health literacy, really believing that every one of us have a role in the mental health of ourselves and others.
Excellent.
Well done.
I was listening for how you met.
I know. Rebecca.
I didn't know if you wanted me to.
No.
I will tell you how we met.
You had me hanging on a thread here.
I'm like, this is going to be a great story.
I know. So
it is.
It actually, oh my gosh, it was right after the withdrawal from Afghanistan. So Given Hour has been involved in military space since 2005. And, you know, we provide non-clinical and clinical support to active duty veterans and their loved ones, and have before the mental health was even a conversation that was actively happening in this space. And during the withdrawal from Afghanistan, we were approached by a veteran service organization that came together really organically. And they were serving, there were a lot of veterans and active duty members who were still continuing the mission of bringing individuals from Afghanistan into the United States, but also helping with the resettlement efforts in the United States. And we came in as a partner to help support the mental health needs of those people who are providing frontline service. And so they're doing this on their own time, volunteer. We had individuals working 22, 23 hours a day, working their phones and taking texts and messaging. And by the time we hit December, people's mental health was really, really in kind of a desperate space. And so Given Hour stepped into that, and we worked with people individually and put together an entire mental health segment to help support people. And from that, we were introduced to Rebecca, and I won't tell her story, I'll let her do that, who had this very specialized group of individuals that she was working with, Female Tactical Platoon. And it just kind of spawned into, like, how could we use her credibility and her experience and her understanding of the experiences that these women have had. And then these women were then moved into the United States and are in this resettlement. And how do we leverage that to see how do we support people's mental health, you know, in the present moment, but more enduring. And so we came together around that. And I'll let you go from there, Rebecca.
Yeah. So as Trina was mentioning, it was, you know, right around December timeframe, just to paint the picture, you know, it had been about 4 months, 4 or 5 months since the withdrawal. And, you know, it was really starting to take a real toll on the individuals that were committed to assisting these individuals. It, you know, it's something that we feel is our duty to stand by these individuals that were there for us when we were in Afghanistan. And even if you didn't deploy to Afghanistan and you just on a basic human level, you know, you're wanting to assist somebody that's been through such a traumatic and life-changing experience. So, you know, you feel a little bit helpless when you can't quite relate to that person's experience. And so looking for mental health resources for such a niche population is really difficult. And so when Trina reached out to me, she was like a godsend because I'd been scratching my head the entire time thinking, how do I even approach this conversation with individuals that I can't possibly relate to everything that they've been through? And that's really what opened the door to me for Given Hour and getting to know what they do as an organization and how very unique they are in addressing new and emerging needs and, you know, trying to be on the ground with the population just to determine exactly what the needs are.
That is an amazing story, actually. I'm glad that you shared that. That puts more context around the bio that we read just a little bit ago.
So, Rebecca, would you say you're like an intern today for GAH, right?
Yeah.
Is that a permanent status or is that something
that?
I'll put Trina on the spot. Yeah.
For right now, it's the perfect fit. So I'm attending the University of Southern California as a graduate student pursuing a master's in social work. And
congrats.
Thank you very, very much. I thank the Veterans Administration for making it possible for me to go to college at this stage in my life. But with that, you know, when I first was introduced to Trina, I was so invested in my former role and in helping, you know, my colleagues resettle that I actually had to take a 2-year pause in my master's pursuit in order to just focus on that, you know, day in and day out. And so once they became a little bit more stable and I was able to move into the next phase of my life, I re-enrolled into school and I needed a place to facilitate my placement. So I'm doing work with Given Hour in order to achieve my master's degree.
Excellent.
I'll put a plug in for one of my daughters that doesn't listen to the podcast that she's getting her master's in social work at Florida Gulf Coast University.
All right. So
really? That's awesome.
I'll put a plug in there too. Is really, we'd be very interested to talk to her about her clinical
hours. Whoa. All right. Wait, hang on. Put a pause on the podcast.
Now she's going to have to listen to the podcast.
I know. You're going to have to send her a clip.
Tell her there's an Easter egg in episode 52 for her to find.
That's to find. But I will add too is that we hadn't had a lot of interns. We've had a few interns and we want that to become more normative for us is that we have this entire network. We have about 4,000 mental health providers who donate. So Given Hour, hence the name, who donate an hour of mental health care to service members and their loved ones. And part of this is that we really want to be on the cutting edge of getting more people accustomed to serving this population. Generally, when you're going through your clinical hour and your education as a clinician, you're not going to be exposed to military veterans unless you go do something, you know, particularly with the VA. So it's not a common population to have access to. And so what we want to be able to do is leverage the power of our network where they could actually provide the clinical oversight versus an hour of care where we can bring into the next generation of individuals who can serve this population. I think that we're all in agreement that we have no idea the implications and the ramifications of what's coming from mental health support. And it doesn't even have to be dramatic mental health support, but just this enduring of an aging population that came out of 20 years of war. And while we've learned a lot from previous ones, we haven't had an infrastructure that can support it. There's not a durability built in. And so if we could be part of that solution where we have these opportunities and in something like this, this is like, I mean, we can't find somebody more magical. That's really a unicorn in Rebecca, is that she has the experience. She has this very unique experience. She has a voice of a woman in military service, and she's working, you know, to finish out her clinical care. And so she's been able to bring rich insights and then assume some roles for us that we had envisioned but hadn't put into practice. And so one of them is taking on the peer support facilitator role, where we have somebody with a lived experience. We train them to leverage that lived experience to connect with others and then be able to use that in service to people. So we don't have to have so many mental health providers. We need more, but we can't solve this problem by sending people to therapy. And so having this person who can understand the nuances and the, as she mentioned, the stigma to overcome and the culture that's involved with this is one of the many ways that we plan on addressing this now and in the future.
Well, that's outstanding. You've literally walked a mile in their boots. Yeah. Literally.
A few miles. Yeah.
www.giveanhour.org. So your website's pretty cool. It says listen, period, lean in, period, learn, period, lead, period. You also have mental health for life. But on the website, you also support different groups with mental wellness services like mass violence, caregivers, rare caregivers, and of course, military. So I guess big question is, what brought you to the military service members? And I think Rebecca talked a little bit about that too, or veterans and their families as a group that you needed to serve in the care that you provide. What was the draw?
I mean, the original draw back in 2005 is our founder is a psychologist and really looked around and saw around the corner on this, is that individuals are coming through, you know, the different cycles of war and didn't have the mental health space. We didn't have the language kind of normative in our culture. The military, it wasn't part of the culture there as well. And so there was a real shift that needed to happen. And so she leveraged her experience and her kind of positioning within the psychological community to really show influence there to bring this network of clinical providers together. And so we have this network, but then over time, over the last, you know, for the first 10 years, it was really about that clinical one-to-one match. And it was getting around stigma and getting around barriers to care. And then as the military started making huge advances, which they have and did hit, and really changing the conversations and making mental health more accessible, we also saw that, again, we just have these workplace, we have a shortage of not just therapists, but therapists working with this population, like understanding and investing in this population. And so we added, you know, really in response, and that's that listen and learn, you know, listen, learn, leverage, and lead. In response to the different needs out there, we understand that someone like Rebecca has so much more accessibility to someone in uniform or out of or that was previously in service than a clinical provider that maybe just came through their education and hasn't had any of these experiences. So we know that there's healing power between peers. And if we can really harness that as well, it can help the individual service member heal while they're also healing others. And so we've added peer support, wellness ambassadors to also our clinical kind of cadre of expertise.
And I mean, that makes all the sense in the world. I do want to spend a few minutes talking about the Stand Together Foundation as well with you. What can you share with our audience about that particular program?
Yeah, so Stand Together Foundation, a giant philanthropic endeavor. But what they've done, I think, is incredibly unique. And we're very fortunate to be connected with them. But they collaborate with high-impact nonprofits across lots of sectors of nonprofit work, and they're committed to principles of empowerment. And so rather than imposing these very top-down solutions, so if you think about mental health, it's often very top-down. You go to a provider, you get what the provider offers. You go to get medication, you get what medication is offered. But it's not an entirely empowering experience. And so we've really flipped the script on that, which is that we actually go to people that we serve and we listen to what their wants and needs are. And then we curate what those wants and needs are with the help of clinical backing and clinical support, good evidence-based practices, but also making things consumable and easy to access. So we don't throw up a lot of barriers to people getting the kind of care that they want and need. And so some of it is education, like mental health literacy. Others is being able to remove barriers to address stigma. But so much of the power of what we're able to do is really around human connection. And so Stand Together, we competed with many other Catalyst communities, other nonprofits, and we were selected for an impact grant. And so they've spent two, going on our third year pretty soon, years of investing in us to really put this into practice, to map our customer, to understand our customers' wants and needs, to understand their experience. And that includes our providers. So we make sure our mental health providers and our people who come to us for clinical and non-clinical care are given the red carpet experience and they're given what they're needed and make sure that we can reduce as much stress as possible, increase as much access as possible, and get people connected on a care journey. And it's not just a one and done, but something to make sure that as your needs change, we can help adjust and change as well. And so we try to be very responsive so people can have agency in mental health. And I think that's one of the things that we haven't felt in mental health across the country is a sense of agency. And we want to put that empowerment back in people's hands.
I love that. And I'm sure it makes the receivers of that care feel like it's specialized for them and not just sort of a one-size-fits-all solution that's sort of cast with a wide net.
Absolutely. And with that, as you both know, with this population, you can't not be genuine. You can't.
Yeah. They'll see through that in a heartbeat. Oh, yeah.
You have got to have your homework done before you come. And
they
might
call you out on that.
Yes. Yes. Rebecca is always first to tell us that's not going to work. We need a different way.
You probably have a very good sounding board there.
Very much.
You mentioned, coming up on a 20-year anniversary, it feels like, but you mentioned 4,000, right, professionals that are tied, that you have actually access to 4,000 around the country, probably, or even beyond.
But
how do they enter the equation? How do you find them? How do you vet them?
Yes.
What's the protocols for that? I'm throwing in a new question here that nobody even knew I was going to ask, but that's typical.
That's all right. I led us down a path that I don't think you were going to go down either. So it's perfect. Here's what I really love is like a high touch is that we're not just looking for providers. We're looking for providers that want to learn, that want to be exposed to this population, or that are coming from these experiences who are going into both non-clinical and clinical care, but they really care about mental health for this population. And what we do is, as we learn from people, we actually take that back to our providers and we provide them with training. So last year, I may have my numbers wrong, but we did probably more than 40 credits of like continuing education credits for our provider network, which are at no cost to them. So we underwrite that through grants and donations that people invest in us so we can invest back in our providers. And I feel like that's so much of the secret sauce is that we not only engage with them and interact with them, and we make sure that we're getting people in, not to hit a big number of like, how many people do we have? What kind of quality of people do we have? And are they accessible? And are they committed to this? And then we pour back into them. And so our program manager who works with providers exclusively, I mean, she's in contact with them. She does trainings for them. She does meet and greets. She does peer support to make sure that they have what they need. She makes tools and resources that are really accessible that they can use in their practice or use when they're with clients. And so it's really trying to keep that profession poured into, as well as making sure that that profession has what they want and need in order to crosswalk that with the customer, and making sure that people who are coming to us feel like, wow, this organization gets me and they understand what my experience is. And then we go through a whole vetting process, of course.
Yeah, I figured that was going to happen, because you may have some turnover, you may have some attrition, you may have something that doesn't feel right, and you just want to make sure you do the right thing. You may or may not know this, but Give an Hour, you were listed as one of the 9 best charities that support veterans' mental health in 2024. Is that breaking news or is that old news?
No, we've worked really hard for that. We were recognized by Charity Navigator. And I will say, a lot of the work that we did with Stand Together helped position us that way, because it really made us switch into like our metricing, like how do we get our customers' voice into measurement and measure what they care about, not what philanthropy cares about or what, you know, looks good on a splashy page, but are they feeling connected? Are they feeling cared for? Is there a change for them, like transformation, because of their experience with us? That is very unique to, if they didn't come to us and went somewhere else, we want this experience to be the one that they really felt connected to.
That's outstanding.
Well, Charity Navigator, of course, that's where we typically go when we invite guests, and you're 4 stars. You're top of the line. So kudos to both of you.
Thanks. And yes, and our team worked very, very hard on that. So, and I will say that Charity Navigator has been really responsive to switching how they're rating charities too, because we've always been kind of in that, it's been, you know, it's a big machine in there and it's hard to get this kind of nuance. And so they've been working with Stand Together to actually utilize and acknowledge and recognize the way that we're doing measurement differently. And so doing customer voice measurement. And so it's going to be a game changer for so many of us that, you know, we're not a small nonprofit, we're not a giant one. So when you're kind of midline, you can't always hit the numbers that people put out there. But if you actually ask customers what they want and need and measure it a different way, you'll see that there's actual impact.
Well, it sounds like that might be the most important thing to measure, right? Are you hitting the
end? That's what we think.
Yeah. Are you hitting the end goal there?
All right, Rebecca, we'll probably do a little bit of a tag team on these two questions together, but talking about your military experience, and sounds like you've shared with our audience a little bit, Rebecca, about why you're doing what you're doing. And certainly, Trina, you can talk about, you know, the why behind that too. And maybe if there is a story or two, Rebecca, you want to talk about. And as I look at you on the screen, nobody else can see you except the people in this room. But when I see the FTP behind you, that is so cool because of how much pride you have and all the great things you did to accomplish what you did. And it was probably a daunting task and an undertaking that goes through your mind a lot. But is that a message that is written behind you?
It's actually a recruiting poster that was at one time hanging in the Ministry of Interior in Kabul that helped to recruit these amazing women from the Afghan National Police Force or the Afghan National Army. So those that were bold and brave enough to kind of cross over to the dark side and work in a U.S. military partner unit, which was pretty risky, to say the least, for them. This is one of the products that we used in order to access that population. So proud is probably an understatement.
Yeah.
Definitely the highlight of my military career and the thing that probably, you know, led me to calling it quits, because I just didn't want to do anything else after that. You know, I guess I had reached the thing that I thought I would get out of the military through working with them. And so after 10 years and several deployments to Afghanistan, I decided it was time to hang it up and pursue other things. And so this path that I'm on right now is that pursuit. You know, I think I determined in Afghanistan that what I was doing at the time, it felt really great to be working with a particular population and, you know, helping, empowering and seeing them do things that women previously had never done in Afghanistan. But that only gets you so far. And myself and other veterans that invested any amount of time in Afghanistan, we could see the writing on the wall that eventually things would come to an end. We just didn't realize how tragic that ending would be. And so essentially, you know, I wanted to start looking at other solutions and how I could impact that population outside of the military. So I went back to college and started pursuing social work and found myself with Given Hour. And I'm actually doing just that, looking for ways to impact not only the FTPs, but, you know, the entire military community that has a lot of the same struggles, you know, with mental health, stigma, and all of that. It exists pretty much everywhere you go.
Seems like your decision-making process that caused you to say it's time, my military service has ended, really drove you to find your why here with Given.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it seems to me that you really haven't stopped serving. You're just doing it quite differently.
Yeah. I like to think of it that way. It was a tough pill to swallow, I think, for most military members when you decide to you know, transition out of the military. And probably for a couple of years, it was hard for me to accept, you know, no longer serving in uniform, but I definitely have rediscovered that sense of purpose and contribution. And I definitely feel good about where life has taken me.
That's fantastic. That's right.
And the work is never done either. You know, I was on the board of directors for ALS, and you know, your work's not done until you find a cure for it. You know, with what Rebecca and Trina do, there's that demand's always going to be there. It's almost recession-proof, unfortunately, because the stuff is going to keep living, and you're always going to need resources, but like you offer to be there for our veterans and for other people that are going through these types of traumas in their lives too.
Yeah, I had the privilege of being invited by Rebecca and some others in a community that have been really instrumental in some of the resettlement efforts. And so this community has a lot of FTPs in it, have tried to really embrace and support. And we went home to home, and to be invited into these women's homes and to have tea with them and to have conversation with them was incredibly moving, and to try to glean some insights about how difficult this is going to be, how difficult it already has been, and how difficult it is going to be when you have such culture involved that is so... The culture is not set up for mental health for people who have come here as refugees. And the mental health system isn't set up. And so we already have a durability issue with the existing system for veterans and service members. And then you add individuals who are involved and have rich, thick relationships that I think we've overlooked the moral injury that this has created and caused for service members. And we're having a difficult time meeting the needs of these individuals who served as brothers and sisters in arms right alongside our service members like Rebecca. So I just want to say it was such a privilege. And there was so much insight about, as you said, how much that this is not going to go away.
Right.
This is something that we're going to have to tackle, and we are seeing the effects of it every day.
And we've always, Jody and I have always talked about, there's so many different things that need attention out there that we always talk about. There's 45,000 nonprofits in the military. We deal with food insecurity issues by holding food drives and supporting food pantries on installations. Well, think about the financial stability issues, the homelessness issues that we deal with organizations like Veterans Community Project. And so to have specialists like you and have the resources that you have that are available on your website and through what you offer is pretty amazing.
Thank you.
And then when we subsequently share this with your constituents, with your circles of influence and the people that are part of your lives too, that, you know, what ways can people support Given Hour? What do you see? Whether it's a volunteer or whether it's monetary.
Monetary donation.
It's all of the things.
Talk about those.
Yeah, it's all of them. You know, certainly financial support. We are funded primarily by, you know, grants and foundations and donations. And I think one of the things that we don't realize is that mental health is expensive. And for us, to help one person for a year is about $1,100 per person investment. So if you think of all that you get in that time on your journey, it really isn't a lot compared to having to pay co-pays and to go through insurance and all that. So we don't deal with insurance. We go straight to getting people connected to care and removing that barrier. And then our peer support programs, we're actually doing several for active duty, which is our first time being invited to work with active duty. We've always had it as an option. And so the fact that we're seen as someone who's trusted in this space means a lot to us. And so being able to support, like financially support all or part of a peer group would be incredible for us to be able to do the kind of rich, we're not trying to do a one and done, but we're really trying to work with active duty to learn what is happening with them, to learn how a stigma is operating, and then to also equip them to help each other. And so we have some really great models that we've been working on for the last year with active duty members and leadership and understanding how can we be a support to that and really empower people to help people to the left and to the right? And then, you know, donations, individual donations, again, we have very low operating costs. And so we're people is mostly what we are. And it takes a lot of human connection to do this work. We connect to our providers. We connect to our customers. We don't rely on automation to do this. We believe that healing is through human connection. And we are about 12 people deep. So we do a lot of work, and the more that we can invest in people to help other people, the more that we can to really jumpstart that healing process. And then volunteer is a great option and opportunity. And we have a wellness ambassador program, which is a volunteer program where people can come in, and you just have to have a heart for wanting to learn more about mental health. And what we want to do is equip people with like how your lived experience with mental health, we all have it in some form or fashion, but how can you learn about the five signs of emotional suffering? How do you learn about the healthy habits? How do you learn how to work through the signs of silent suffering? And we really work on the toolkit, but we bring that into a larger network. So we have a network of wellness ambassadors. We have about 1,000 so far. And of course, we want this to be in every community. And so these are individuals, and I know that all of us have had that experience when someone's told you something and the first thought you have is, I'm not a professional. And I'm here to say, you don't need to be a professional. You need a few additional skills in there to stay in a connected conversation with someone. And that's something that we do. And then, of course, we have our volunteer clinical network. And like I said, we pour into that network and we try to make sure that our providers have what they want and need in order for them to, you know, thrive in this space and get the education they want and be connected into something that really means something to them. And we've even in the past years tried to pay our providers. And this is something that they are here because they really care about what happens and they care about this community. And I hear time and time again what our providers get out of working with a service member or a family member who's supporting that. So those are kind of the big ways.
And I would think that it's probably the case that they can, if people are interested in any and all of that, they can find out more about that on your website, givenhour.org.
We made it so easy. Yes.
Yes. givenhour.org.
Yeah, but we could also talk, we throw in a fourth, she's covered a lot of ground with this, how to support. But so the Veteran Workforce Toolkit, could we throw that in there too as a way companies, whether it's through DEI or ways that they can integrate solutions to their to the employer side, right?
Absolutely. We have had this great partnership with the University of Phoenix. They have done a Harris Poll survey every year, which is surveying workers and employers. And as you know, University of Phoenix is very military focused. And what we found, and not any big surprise, is that there's a tremendous gap in perception between what employers think they're doing in terms of mental health and what employees are experiencing in terms of mental health. And there's this 1 to 3 year transition point for a military member. And I know Rebecca could speak to that, is that transition in the first 1 to 3 years from military service into corporate is not a smooth transition. It's very mentally taxing. We do see an uptick in suicide in that first year of military members. And this is completely, there are prevention strategies that we can put in place. So what we did was we worked with some very large corporations that you would know and probably shop and do business with. And we crosswalk that with military workers. And we're trying to understand that gap and how do we build out so you become from military friendly to military informed. And we've spent so much time and energy and thank God for it over the last, you know, 5 years or so, really understanding, as you said, these DEI groups. But we haven't really had education around a military veteran from a veteran. And that's what we're trying to do is amplify what we're learning from veterans, what they're saying, how they want to be supported and acknowledged and recognized and grown in the corporate workspace. And part of it is that they're getting very othered. And the other part is that there's such a misunderstanding about military service and mental health. And we want to be able to have people like Rebecca who can help inform this. And we can translate that for military companies that want to invest in military beyond having a great worker that shows up and is committed to the mission, but that you're really addressing like all of their needs and the ones that they're not going to tell you about.
Right. Yeah. I would also say that whether or not we as veterans are actually being othered, I think it's important to distinguish that that's how we feel. You know, we feel very out of place and, you know, kind of uncomfortable in our own skin trying to navigate that change. And so I think just having awareness of what a growing, you know, period growth spurt, if you will, that is for most people is just, you know, the first step of many. And having a resource like this to be able to reference and build upon is really key.
Yeah, that's so true. I remember watching my husband when he first got out and just that transition from being part of a unit that's tight and cohesive to being just sort of flooded into the corporate world at large and how very different that is just from how the day-to-day functions to how decisions are made or not made or command and control is very different than, let's all sit around and think about how we feel about it. You know, it's very different.
It's a lot. Yeah.
For sure. For sure. And that actually kind of leads into coming back to a little bit of some other things we've talked about some, and you've hit on it in a couple of your other answers. How do you, or if there's anything you'd add to it, how do you, with this group, when we know that it's a proud group, don't like to ask for help, or they're given resiliency classes while they're in uniform and stiff upper lip, strong backbone, all that. How do you make it okay for them to ask for help? And how do you make it to where it's okay for them to walk through that door and say, you know what, I need somebody to talk to, or I need to be part of this group? Or how do you help them feel okay with that?
Well, from my perspective, a lot of it is about the fact that Given Hour is an outside entity, entirely confidential to access. And so that's such a huge part of the concern or the stigma, if you will, that mm-hmm. service members are concerned, and rightfully so, that if they were to try and access support for mental health, that it could somehow negatively impact their career or their reputation or so many different other things. And so knowing that they can reach out to us and access one-on-one provider support or peer support even, I think peer support is such a good first step for especially service members that have never spoken to a provider before. They have so many curiosities and concerns about what that involves. And so mm-hmm. to be able to step into a virtual space with other either active duty service members or veterans that have a shared experience, that speak the same language, that want to show up for you, you know, so it's just such a solid step in the right direction for people to start normalizing the experience, and that it's okay to talk, to share your feelings, although maybe it's been ingrained in you that to talk about feelings, there's no place for that in the Army or the Marine Corps or whatever you come from. It starts to normalize that process, and you actually can benefit from, wow, this actually feels good to get this off my chest. And then also be in the room with people that have similar experiences. So that feeling of othered or that weirdness that you feel like people don't understand you, you get such the opposite of that in one of these meetings.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Oof, as I look at some of the headlines out there too, I don't know how recent this report came out from Disabled American Veterans, but it says mental health outreach efforts need more focus on women vets. And to see that suicide rate 24.1% up, which is what, four times higher than the male side, two times more likely than male veterans to attempt suicide, three times more likely than non-veteran women to choose a firearm as means of suicide. And it's just, I'm sure you get inundated with of the deluge of information that's out there that you want to, it's a cry for help, but you want to do something so quickly to help and intervene at these things to keep these numbers from going in the wrong direction. So the stats are pretty alarming. And what you're doing, Rebecca, walking in the footsteps and then using what you do from a peer standpoint, every person you impact is one more person that you might save. So that's the cool part about what you do.
Thank you. I would agree. I wanted to say real quickly, we just going back to what we were talking about, what people can do to support the mm-hmm. organization.
Yeah.
You know, for any veterans or active duty military that might be listening to this, I feel that there's a means to support by attending one of these peer support groups, because showing up for other people, one, you know, it's innate within us that's something that drives us and makes us feel good. But over time, you start to realize that those people are depending on you to show up, so that they kind of gain that sense of confidence to show up for each other. And so I would just encourage anybody listening to check out one of our peer support groups, because you certainly get a whole lot more out of it than you put into it.
Well, that's a good call out. My husband, 5 years retired, still has people that he calls his battle buddies, still calls, checks up on him. Somehow they have this spidey sense for when they know somebody's going through it, and they all gather around. So, yeah,
absolutely. It's powerful.
I know. This may or may not be a question. It may just come out me saying, I see ambassadors that you showcase right on your website. And you've got, I was just curious about Showtime Sean. that name is a former professional boxer. You've got someone that works for the Elizabeth Dole Foundation out there. You have a documentarian that's out there. Are those You talked about ambassadors earlier. Is this a different ambassador program that you have for Given Arm?
Yeah. We have wellness ambassadors, which can be just everyday people who want to invest in learn and become more equipped with mental health in support of themselves and others. And then we do have ambassadors, which are individuals who have a platform where they want to talk about their own mental health journey and connect it to other people. So again, it helps with much of what you're saying, which is that targeted outreach, is that Showtime has had incredible conversations and we've been so appreciative of his work, is really talking about it and being a high-performing athlete, which resonates with a lot of our military members who are high-performing special operations or special operators or high-performing in their field and feel a stigma around mental health. And so he's also a man of color, and to be able to talk about his influence of talking about mental health and normalizing it in a community that it hasn't been normalized. And it goes a long way in breaking down those barriers and inviting more individuals in. We had a great conversation, a webinar last year for mental health awareness for Men's Mental Health Month. And it was Showtime. It was Dr. Dwayne Buckingham, who's a veteran, who's also a therapist, and Alan Simmons, who's an ambassador for us as well, who's an injured, a combat veteran, a Marine. And they're all men of color. They're all men who've had these experiences with mental health and also have had incredible high-performing on that, the veneer, they're just excelling. And I cannot even begin to tell you the amount of comments that we had where people were like, well, they just have not heard this type of conversation happen. And that's the normalizing. That's the power of bringing people together too, is that we didn't have that scripted. We just put the men in a room together, a virtual room, and it just organically came about. And then our filmmaker, Eric Christensen, made a documentary called Unmasking Hope, where he follows veterans and a veteran female with a military sexual assault. And then also people who've been impacted by 9/11 and a mass shooting event in Las Vegas, who happens to be one of our employees as well, and walks on this several year journey about talking about hope and the role that hope plays in mental health, which is now a big part of our platform as well. So those ambassadors are speaking from their genuine experience and they're speaking out into these spaces to really change the narrative. And if we don't have that, you don't have enough people talking about mental health in a positive, accessible way that can touch them. And so having those ambassadors has been just tremendous for, again, what they pour into our community, but also I know what they get out of it.
I want to make sure that Tom and I, and is there anything that Tom and I have neglected to ask y'all about Given Hour that you really think it's important for our audience to hear today? I want to make sure you have that platform.
Yeah, thank you. I'll speak for me and then I'll leave it for Rebecca. I think one of the things I would just like to remind people is that just because the war is over, in a sense, that the work and the need and people's lives are not just going on as normal. And so we can't let our guard down. And I fear that we're going to have another generation come up and of clinicians and people who are talking about mental health, but have no connection to the military and no connection to what our service members and veterans have and family members have experienced for the last 20 years. And if we don't have a measured, intentional, mobilized way of approaching mental health for this population, we are never going to meet the need. And we're already struggling to meet those needs, as you can see from the statistics that you said. And whether they're trending up or trending down, the work is the work and it's going to continue. And so we've got to prioritize this as a nation. It cannot be that mental health is just too hard and we're not going to invest in it or we're not going to keep it top of mind. So that would be my parting remark.
Very good.
Well, I guess what I would add to that, kind of going back to what you said, Trina, about, you know, how hope is such a critical aspect of the work that we do, in that stigma and talking about suicide statistics and all these very, very painful, difficult topics to address, that's something that we are navigating and approaching head on, despite it being, you know, a dark and difficult undertaking. I mean, meeting with actual commanders and the top level leadership that are essentially, you know, desperate to see a change and not really knowing what that might look like, but being open-minded enough to reach out to an outside source. For me, that is the hopeful thing that really motivates me, is to know that there is change taking place within the military. You do have upper leadership that is acknowledging that this is a problem, and the way that, you know, business as usual of these, you know, resiliency trainings or suicide prevention trainings, or, you know, you name it, that sort of check the block kind of things that we've done historically haven't been working. And so to reach out and be able to ask for help, I think that, you know, is, you know, cliche as it might sound, you know, that's a sign of strength, and that's what's taking place. And that's the work that we feel really energized about, is approaching those conversations, how, no matter how difficult they are, because we actually do believe, and we, you know, that something can be done to change it.
Yeah. I think that's a very good sign that they're willing to look outside the walls.
Absolutely.
Thank you for giving us an hour, because you provide a lifetime of support for the people you serve. I can't say that enough.
You're very proud of yourself for coming up with
so,
that, aren't you?
There's always a moment a year that I get proud of myself.
Yeah, and yeah, you wanted it really on there so you could be validated.
I know. It'll always be out there.
You wanted to be validated. So you're validated.
Well, that's congratulations. It's for my family and my mom, really.
And your daughter that doesn't listen.
Right.
She'd be so proud if she knew.
If she listened, she'd be amazed.
The good news is the other daughter doesn't listen as well. So let's go. We're going to play a quick game here called the Military Minute. You good with that? Just a little bit longer with us.
Yes, right. We won't put you on the spot, because I don't think there's any chance that you would know the answers.
You never know. Goodness.
Well, you might. Where's maybe you will. Yes, so it's a trivia game we like to play with our audience. So on our last podcast, we had guests from the IVMF and the OVMA offices at Syracuse University. And our question tailored to them was, what does the acronym STRIVE stand for? Any guesses really quick?
Strive. You'd actually have to go right to their website now, in the next 22 seconds.
And you'd have to straight up Google this.
Not pretend.
Okay. So let's give the answer. Yeah.
So if you're in our audience, and when we dropped that podcast, you answered that Strive meant startup training resources to inspire veteran entrepreneurship. You got all the
Another
words
mouthful.
And maybe yeah. even spelled entrepreneurship right, which is a challenge because there's a lot of vowels in there. You could be eligible to win $50 for yourself and $50 to a charity of your choice. I think Given Hour would be a great opportunity to use that $50 wisely. And so then fast forward to this week's Military Minute in honor of Dr.
To not
Clay.
Say a thing.
Yes,
right.
You can't say anything. Yeah, you can't answer this. So what are the three components and corresponding distances in a full Ironman competition?
Oh, gosh.
I know. You got to say
other
it again.
Than death is certain. Completion.
No, you got to say, you didn't say the question right. I don't think you said in miles, did you? Because somebody might do kilometers.
Okay, Tom. I'll read it verbatim.
Let's do it verbatim, Tom.
What are the three components and corresponding distances, in miles, of the Ironman competition? Yes.
And there's probably not, like you said, there's not just three components.
Like, I would literally probably need to go to the ER if I did any one component. So
any 1/20th of the component.
Yes. Yeah. Although I did run a full marathon a long time ago.
Do you know how many miles is?
I can't say.
Don't say it.
But yeah. I did run one, and I literally laid in the hotel for almost 2 full days afterwards thinking death was imminent. Ordering room service because I thought I was going to die. My body shut down. I had chills. It was terrible.
And then you did another one a week later.
No. Maybe in my hallucinated state I did. I don't know. But if you know the answer to the Ironman question, and when we drop this podcast, make sure you hit us up in the comments with your answer. And if you're right, we'll put your name in the hat also to win $50 for yourself and $50 for a charity of your choice.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Thank you both. And if you enjoyed today's episode, go out to afbank.com and subscribe to the show. Also, make sure to rate us or leave us a comment on your favorite podcast platforms, such as Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I thought this was awesome.
Thank you so much, ladies. It was a pleasure to meet you both. Learn about your organization.
It was really wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for the thoughtfulness.
Yeah.
You got it.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Copyright Armed Forces Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. All non-Armed Forces Bank-owned apps, websites, company names, and product names are trademarks or registered trademarks of their respective owners. Their mention does not imply any affiliation with or endorsement by Armed Forces Bank of them or their products and services. They are merely used as examples of the many available apps, companies, and websites that offer similar services. Before using any app or website, you should carefully review the terms of use, data collection, and privacy policy. Apps may have an initial cost or in-application purchase features. This information is general in nature and is not intended to be legal, tax, or financial advice. Although Armed Forces Bank believes this information to be accurate, it cannot ensure that it could change. Statements or opinions of individuals referenced herein are their own, not Armed Forces Bank. Consult an appropriate professional concerning your specific situation and respective governing bodies for applicable laws, such as IRS.gov for current tax law. Armed Forces Bank, the Armed Forces Bank logo, and the Militarily Speaking logo are registered trademarks of Armed Forces Bank.